The Warriors podcast, conversations with folks from in and around the organization, picking back up in Denver, Colorado, a Warriors road trip where we get a chance to talk with the voice of the Warriors, Warriors broadcaster Tim Roy. And, you know, it's kind of strange that we're the two people that do podcasts within the organization and we're doing a podcast here together. But this one's about your life and a wonderful article in the San Francisco Chronicle recently that Ron Krajicek, one of the best writers in the Bay Area in the world of sports, was able to really do in a nice way to present your career and how you got started. And I encourage folks who want to know more about Tim and his upbringing to check out that article. And when you look at the origins of wanting to be a sportscaster, when you think back to that time growing up in Connecticut, like, when did it click? Like, no, this is something I would love to do.
Well, you know, I grew up with my parents had five kids. Two of them were out of the house by the time I was born. Let's just put this bluntly. I was not planned, okay? So it just sort of happened. And my mom actually had me when she was 40. Now, today, no big deal, right? Back when I was born, which is a long, long time ago, that was a big deal. And she was sick, and then she ended up losing some of the sight in her left eye. And as a result, you know, it kind of started this whole deal. My dad, you know, so I had two brothers that were in the house, and we were always roughhousing and playing sports and doing stuff. So I was always interested in sports. But when my mom needed eye surgeries and appointments, we would go either to Massachusetts Eye, Ear, and Nose or New York Eye, Ear, and Nose, which were specialty hospitals back in the day. And my dad would take us along, A, to support my mom, and B, he would take us out of school for a day or whatever, and to make it an experience for us when my mom would either go in for a surgery or be, you know, for an appointment and check out where they were going to do some testing. He would find a game for us. We either went to a museum or a game. And so, you know, I got to see games in the old Madison Square Garden, old Shea Stadium, old Yankee Stadium, Fenway Park, the old Boston Garden. And so this was we looked forward to these trips. They were great. And so I was interested in sports. But when my mom was ruled legally blind in her left eye, it qualified her for books on record. For you, those of you who are young, records are a little thing, a circle with vinyl that is, you know, where they imprint the music on there, and it really sounds better than anything they've made so far. But anyway, I digress. So anyway, they would send her this little phonograph, which was a tiny box. It opened up. It had a turntable on it with a needle, much like a DJ would have now. But instead of music, she qualified for books, and they would send her a catalog, and she would pick books. I got sick when I was young and had some issues and some stomach issues that they never really found out about what it was going. It just kind of came mysteriously and vanished mysteriously. But when I was homesick, my mom decided to order me a couple of books. So I would come in and either lay in her bed while she was doing work there, housework or whatever, and she bought me this book by Red Barber. It's like Rhubarb and the Catbird Seed, and it was about his life and times as a baseball announcer. He's a very famous baseball announcer for the Brooklyn Dodgers, New York Yankees, and as he's going through, and he narrated the book. You know, it's not like today where you get a book and it's maybe an actor or somebody who's narrating it. So he himself narrated it, and in his, you know, kind of distinct style, was describing, you know, all these great things that he witnessed and doing the job and the whole bit. And I thought, that's pretty cool. You get to go everywhere and watch these games. And that's how it started.
You know, I think when I listen to the game broadcast, that the sport of basketball has changed so much with the Warriors in many ways, the speed of it and how it seems like you're almost calling on radio what is the pace of what hockey has kind of always been. But what's fun is to think of a young Tim in Connecticut watching Boston Bruins games on television, but with a tape recorder narrating the hockey action. Do you think in any way that the speed of that game is something you clocked yourself for that early, enables you to do what you do, which is remarkable, keeping up with the pace of what's the NBA and especially this Warriors team?
Yeah, because back then in the late 60s, the Bruins were the hot ticket. You could walk up day of a playoff game and get a Boston Celtic ticket. Red Sox weren't making the playoffs back then. 67 was the first time they had gone to the World Series in forever. I think 46 was the last time they had gone. So you could get Red Sox tickets. We would get tickets to bleacher seats and bribe the guard at the right field foul line, go through the fence, and sit behind home plate, which was really cool for a young kid. But anyway, the hockey was a sport that if you grew up in New England, you love hockey. It's just that's the way it is. And so watching those games, I was really a fan of it. And then the Whalers came around in the WHA. Both they started in Springfield, and they were the New England Whalers, and then became the Hartford Whalers. And so that was even better because it was like 8 minutes, 10 minutes away. So when I went to college, I was the idiot in my freshman year, small college, Utica College, which was great for me because it was a better fit. Went to a small Catholic high school. And I could get on the air right away. So freshmen, they had a soon-to-be Division III hockey power, but the only time they could play games was on the weekends at this rink two towns over that was the coldest rink in America. No rink could be colder. And I said, do you want to go do the games? They're 8 a.m. on Saturday, Sunday. And I'm in college. Who gets up at 6:30 in the morning in college on the weekend? But I did. And literally me and this guy, John Castellini, who now works in the New York State Legislature as a lobbyist, and he's an official with the state. And he and I would go do the games, and literally we would put the headset on and then take our parkas and put the parka over the headset to stay warm. Our in-between period show, hockey has three periods, would be to throw it back to the station for news and whatever, and then we would run over to the pool, which was right next door. The pool was heated. That room was warm. And we would sit there and warm up for 10 minutes and then go back into the end. So I had, hockey in my background. I learned how to get to the pace of the game. And at the end of my sophomore year in college, I walked into a local radio station. They were looking for a backup minor league hockey announcer, which meant I got all the games on holidays and all the bad, at Utica, at Nashville, Utica to Nashville, Utica, New York to Nashville, Tennessee. That's a 16-hour bus ride. So anyway, I got all of those games. But when I walked in, I had this reel-to-reel tape, which is how you tape stuff back then. And I fit all their criteria. I was young, I was naive, and I could be had cheap. So I fit the whole bill, and they said, okay, great, you're our guy. And so I was literally running the campus radio station my junior and senior year, working as a backup announcer in minor league basketball, baseball, and hockey. Baseball didn't matter because I was in the summer, so I just stayed and did it. And then also working vacation relief in the summer, which meant running the big band radio show from 12 to 5 on tape. So it was good times. I really enjoyed it. But doing hockey first, and I'm getting at this in a circular way, doing hockey first, I think, benefited me because there's two things you can't do in hockey. You can't look down. You look at your notes, you're done because the puck's already in the net. And secondly, if you can handle the pace of hockey, you can handle anything. It's a lot easier to slow down your pace than it is to pick it up.
Your style and Doc Emmerich's style, to me, seem very similar in this nice pace and sharing a story. And, I mean, this is the story, by the way, of your life, this podcast. I mean, this is what we're doing. We're going to go city to city here. So I'm not going to bother you with the concept of the Hartford Whalers fandom you had makes you follow Carolina Hurricanes hockey these days. But when we look at what it is to be leaving Utica and then going to Birmingham, Alabama, that's potential culture shock.
Yeah, it is potential culture shock, and it is one of the story was that I worked in Utica 4 years after graduation, 4.5 years, and I was doing everything, and I loved it. I had hired some really good kids who had moved on to other stuff. Bob Papa, who didn't last long in upstate, he was a New York City kid. now, you know, voice of the New York Football Giants, Jim Jackson, TV voice of the Philadelphia Flyers. So I've always had good luck in hiring good people and had good interns and getting them to work, and I always gave them a lot to do. But it was, you know, it was Utica, New York, and it was the, 150th market in the country. And I could have stayed there and, you know, and done it, and it would have been great, but I really wanted to move on. I wanted to push myself. I've always wanted to do that. So our station was bought by a company that had stations in the South, and they said, we want you to go down and work on this WVOK in Birmingham and go down and be the guy there, be the sports guy. Harder job than I thought. I did PM Drive Sports and a talk show and some play-by-play. So I was on the go a lot. My dating life was not very good at that point.
Was it all just like roll tide all night long?
Well, here's what happened. This is a true story. I can't remember the guy's name. He was the station manager. I'm sure I can make a call back to Birmingham and find my friends there. I made some really good friends there. Real hospitable people. It's a very underrated city. Great medical center. There are lots of young kids, lots of energy. And but anyway, I walked into the radio station, sat on top of Vulcan Mountain, which is this little hill, that's not a hill, but it's a little mountain that sits outside of Birmingham. And so the general manager brought me in his office. He takes me to his back window. He says, see that cemetery down there? That's where the bear is buried. The bear being Paul Bryant, okay? So who had died a couple of years before. And then he says, now I know you're a Yankee, and you're not used to things down here. He says, so I want you to know there are two sports you need to cover hard. Football. And I kind of nodded because I thought, yeah, of course, football. And he goes, and spring football. Those are the two sports you're going to really cover hard. And it was true. It was really weird. I do the talk show. I got Dale Murphy from the Atlanta Braves on my talk show, mid-'80s, two-time most valuable player. And we had a smattering of phone calls. Occasionally, a couple phone calls here and there. I had a backup linebacker on Auburn who was their punter in the 60s who was doing a charity golf tournament, and I had people ringing off the hook saying, I saw you throw a block on a punt against Tennessee back in 64. I was like, oh my man, this is unbelievable. But I loved it, and I, for any sports fan who likes college football, going to see an SEC football game has to be on your bucket list. It's a totally different experience. It is, you know, everything from kids, frats and fraternities and sororities walking into a game in Tuscaloosa in coat and ties and dresses to kids chanting at the Alabama bus I was on in Baton Rouge saying tiger bait with beers in their hands, right? You know, and the day of the game. And it was like, you know, okay, the game doesn't kick off for another 4 hours and these guys are already, you know, in rare form. It's a unique place, and it's really where college football is king. And it was fun. I enjoyed it.
So then you're career around professional sports starts taking flight as you drive from Birmingham and make your way to Phoenix, Arizona. Yes?
I'm going to interrupt you for a moment because I want to, you mentioned the Hartford Whalers, and I can't pass this up. So my ringtone for my phone, when the Whalers would score a goal, they played a song called Brass Bonanza. I'm hoping we can pick this up here. Here we go.
That's a pretty brassy bonanza.
It's a brassy bonanza, and every time they scored a goal, that's what's it. Except for R.C. Davis. For R.C. Davis, his ringtone is a Michael Jack Schmidt home run called by Harry Callis, so I had to do that for him.
Okay, well, before we get to Phoenix then, let's take a little interstitial here and talk about one R.C. Davis, the producer of Warriors radio broadcasts, and also the, you know, director of what we do with Warrior Sound and executive producing some of this, bringing it all together, running the broadcast department for the team. I mean, he's a jack of all trades, does a great job, but his attention to detail really fits what you need in the booth. We've got a great staff around us. I mean, this year it's been really fun to hear Tom Tolbert and Jim Barnett with you on the broadcast, and James Kincaid helps out as well. But we've been talking about RC for just a second. I mean, a producer is so key to making the kind of broadcast that the Warriors make.
when we were looking to hire a replacement producer, Henrik Mung was our first producer, and he was awesome. But you know, he had other fish to fry, and in order to do that, he had to leave us. And so, when we were hiring RC, they asked me about RC Davis. I said, "Look, here's two things about him. He's the most three things. The most organized guy I know. He loves the NBA, so there's never any worry about that. And he has a passion, you know, to do radio." I said, "Those three things." I said, "You have to hire this guy. We won't find anybody better."
One more detour question there, because, I mean, leaving Birmingham and having been in Utica, and then you're on your way to Phoenix, you think of the paces that it takes to get that first job, excel at that first job, take it to the plateau that's the next springboard kind of job before you're covering professional sports. And for younger folks who are listening to this, who aspire to do sports broadcasting and perhaps play-by-play distinctly, when you think of the steps that are absolutely necessary for young people to get, be it a journalism background or a certain kind of understanding of the world that's not just sports, like Bill King once had, what do you consider to be sort of the perfect combination of what young people need to excel and have a fighting chance at getting to do what we're so lucky to do and what you do on the broadcasts?
I think the first thing I tell young broadcasters, be well-read. And I know in today's world, kids are reluctant or they really are not exposed to reading books, magazines, newspapers. So I tell them, I said, "Look, you know, you need to get on the horn and, you know, read some newspapers, read a magazine, read a book, get, you know, listen to podcasts that talk about language and find out where, you know, you can fill in the blank." And so, because part of the job is repetition, and part of that, in order to make it special, is to come up with different words to describe the same thing. And I think and we're wordsmiths. We're supposed to be wordsmiths. And it's hard to be eloquent sometimes when the play isn't, but I think it's necessary to have a command of the language. And I think that's the first thing they need to do. And unfortunately for a lot of them, there's not a lot of stations like WIBX in Utica that I worked at, because that station allowed you to do everything. You know, I made a lot of mistakes there because I was 21 and didn't know what I was doing, right? But it's a small market, and you're allowed a certain amount of leeway, but you also get the repetitions. And play-by-play, it's very hard to start at the top. And it shows when guys get bumped up too quickly, I think. But so I would say find a place where you can get repetitions, be well read, and then just be observant and workmanlike. And by that I mean, you know, watch what's happening in practice, watch how the coaches coach, watch what they do, how they're doing it. And like I say, I always tell kids who do high school games, don't just do your high school, call the other high school, okay? Call their coach. Find out who's playing well for them. Find out, you know, what kind of, you know, go watch a couple of their games if you have time and say, "Hey, you like to use zone timeouts." Or, you know, if it's a football, "Hey, I see you guys love the screen. Why do you guys throw a lot of screens?" And then find out from them who's playing well, and find out from them what they like about, you know, your team that you're covering. Say, "Hey, who do you like on, you know, so-and-so high school?" And find out what that coach is looking at and make them part of your broadcast as well.
Okay, one more detour before we get to Phoenix, and it's about wordsmiths. And you just said that. That's the goal of this job, especially with radio, to truly paint the picture and be a wordsmith. So I guess I think of it this way. There's things that just happen and come out. But there's something I've always wondered. When you're going into, let's say, a finals clinching game, do you kind of think ahead of time of what's become now probably the most famous call in Bay Area sports history? And I kid you not. What would be a bigger call than the Bay's team is the best team? What would be a bigger call? Dwight Clark's catch?
The band's on the field.
Okay, that made the rounds. But I'm saying it's something that you felt, and it, I mean, okay, being a Warriors guy, yes, I felt that. You know, it's just like that was it. So did you think about that any ahead of time, or is it this thing that just like flows out?
I think what I wanted, you know, I thought, okay, going into that game, I thought if they win it, I thought what's really cool about this was that up until that moment, the generation that was growing up now, the generation that was, you know, 30 years old, 38 years old, they didn't have their Warrior team. They didn't have that Warrior Championship team. That was Dad's team, Grandpa's team, Grandma's team, and Mom's team. So this was going to be their team, and that kind of led me to like, okay, well, we're the Bay's team. We have been talking about that all year, how we were the Bay's team. It's only one pro basketball team in the Bay. And so I guess that was in the back of my mind. And then I think when it got to it, I was thinking, okay, it's been 40 years. And that's what kind of came out of it. It had been 40 years. And I thought, because I wanted to make that point that, okay, it's been that long. So now you've got your team, and this is your team to do it. So that's how it came out. I was lucky that it came out that way. I'm lucky people liked it. So I was very blessed to do that. But I tried not to script anything, whether it be this year or that year or, you know, 17 or 18, just because I think when you script it, it sounds scripted. So I tried to kind of let my gut tell it. I will say, the one thing I'm really proud of in that broadcast in 2015, and it occurred to me with about 90 seconds left, and there was a stoppage in play, and I looked over at Tom Tolbert, and I said, there's one thing I really regret about this, because it was pretty obvious the Warriors were going to win it at that point. You know, and Tom had gone, this is over. I said, well, thanks for the dramatic lead, isn't it? You know, but the one thing I was really proud of was I remembered with 90 seconds to go, and I told Tom, one thing I'm really sad about today is that Bill King's not alive to witness this. That would have been really cool. It'd have been really cool because he was so nice to me, so supportive early in the lean years, and so supportive when I came on board to do some Ace TV. I tell people this all the time, and I honest to God mean it, that it's an honor for me to be linked to him by default. But just the fact that we were Warrior announcers, and I guess we were at one point A's announcers, but the fact that I've been a Warriors announcer and Bill King was a Warriors announcer, that to me means everything.
No doubt. And getting to the Golden State Warriors, there were two stops. Now we'll talk about Phoenix and Sacramento, kind of all in one, maybe, because this is where your career around pro sports started taking off and different opportunities in both Phoenix and Sacramento on the way to the Bay Area.
Yeah, Phoenix was interesting. I had to leave Birmingham because for almost two months, the general managers kept coming into our station saying, oh, little mix-up. The Knoxville station has our checks. We've got theirs checks. And so that's usually a sign that the company's going under. Yeah. And it was. And so I had a friend, Lee Hamilton, who was the sports director and the head guy at KTAR Radio in Phoenix. And I knew Lee because he was before me at WIBX in Utica.
Is this the same Lee that was in San Diego for forever?
Yes, yeah. And so Lee would come back in the summertime to go see his relatives up in Old Forge, New York, and Utica, and he would come into the radio station, and this is a sight that I've never seen before. He would call ahead, and the news director would pile up a copy that would come over the ticker. The ticker was this big machine in the back that just chattered away. All night, all day long, with news and weather and things like that. And it's for those of a certain age, it's that old news sounder that you would hear behind radio and TV news. That was the sound of the ticker. And we would save ticker copy for Lee when he would come back on vacation. And he would go into a studio and just go through it. On his vacation, he would do this so that he was up to date with what was happening in sports. His work ethic is off the charts, and it's one of the reasons I get to do what I do. And so he had just taken the Charger job and was leaving KTAR to go to Extra in San Diego. a station that had a 100,000-watt signal because it was the towers were based in Tijuana. So the Mexican FCC did not have any problem with interfering with other stations. So
there's a fabulous book about radio that originated in Mexico by Pope Brock, Charlatan. It's about Dr. John Brinkley, who had a radio station in Kansas, and a lot of the early country music, and you saw this in the recent Ken Burns documentary, they were doing these shows and it would be beamed from Mexico where they could almost like do a shield to fire off even a bigger signal than you would expect because of a bounce. You know, like it was kind of a cool thing where you could hear it all the way across our country. So yes, that station that Lee was at in San Diego with the tower in Mexico, you could pick it up in Fort Wayne, Indiana, probably.
Yeah, so he was leaving, and he says, "Really, you said you're available?" I said, "Yeah, I am." He says, "Because they're looking for somebody. They brought in like two or three guys. They haven't liked any of them, so they flew me in, and I did a demo talk show with a guy named Greg Schulte, who's the longtime voice of the Diamondbacks, and we hit it off. He's a super nice guy." And just gave me nothing but room and rope, and so they liked the show and called me about less than a week later and said, "When can you get here?" And I said, "Now." So I gave my 2 weeks in Birmingham, flew out, and here I am in the mid 80s. I'm in Phoenix, worked there for a couple of years. And then I got two good, really good Phoenix stories. One was, the thing I miss about today, not being in a radio station or a TV station, was breaking stories. I love to break stories, and I broke a bunch of them. And the one in Phoenix I'm most proud of is we broke the Bill Frieder story, which was Bill Frieder left Michigan in 1989 to become the head basketball coach at Arizona State. Bo Schembechler was the AD at Michigan. He didn't like that, so he fired Frieder on the spot and hired Steve Fisher, who took Michigan to the Final Four, which I covered in Seattle, and they won everything. Anyway, so Greg and I had narrowed the coaching search at ASU for a new head basketball coach. They fired Steve Patterson, former UCLA player for John Wooden. Nice guy, but was, I think, in over his head a little bit as far as a Pac-10 coach. So we have down to five or six guys. One of them is Gene Keady of Purdue. Gene Keady came out and he accepted it and then said, "No, I'm going to go back to," he basically used ASU's leverage, got a big contract from Purdue, went back to Purdue. So now the guys from ASU, the sports information director, Mark Brand, calls and says, "We have a press conference 9 a.m. tomorrow morning. What's it about?" "It's about ASU men's basketball." Okay, they've made their decision. They're hiring somebody. So we call around, and we have these four guys. One of them was Jerry Pym, who was the head coach at UC Santa Barbara. He was on his boat in a marina. I got a hold of the number in the marina, called the marina. The guy at the marina goes, "Yeah, I just saw Jerry. Let me go down and get him. He's on his boat." He walked down, got Jerry. Jerry comes back and goes, "No, it's not me, man. I'm here. I'm on the boat. I'm not going." So it's not Jerry Pym. So now Greg's working the other two. So now my second guy is Frieder. I call the Detroit Free Press. Yeah. And so I find their beat writer. I call the editor. "Hey, here's what we're doing. I'm working on a story. I'll include your beat writer if you can help me out, and I'll share information." And so, sure, he gives me a number of the guys. I call him at the house. Guy says, I said, "Well, was Frieder at practice today?" And he says, "You know what? I had a day off coming. We set the backup. Let me call him. I'll call you back." He calls me back about 2 minutes later, and he is breathless. He goes, "The backup says he wasn't at practice, and they said he was recruiting." He goes, "He doesn't recruit. The assistants all recruit. So something's up. Now we know." Okay. Backstory is, I had been dating an America West flight attendant. It did not end well. Pun intended, it crashed and burned. Okay, it was yeah, bad. Okay, so I call, I've got to find out if he's coming, right? Because it's 9 a.m. So I call her, leave a message on her answer machine. Answer machines were now just in vogue. And I said, "Look, I don't want to date you, but I'm really in a jam. I need your help." She calls back. Her first question is, "Are you in jail?" I said, "No, I'm not in jail." But I think she was kind of hoping. But anyway, I said, "Look, you know, how, you know, if I, you know, what airline does a guy fly if he's got to get to Phoenix in a hurry from Detroit?" And she said, "Oh, it's easy, Northwest Airlines." So we kind of called Northwest Airlines. I kind of bent the rules a little bit and said, "I just want to make sure that, you know, I don't want to go there if he's not going to be there." And the guy said, "You know, if I were you, I think I would go there." So we show up. Now, here's the problem. I have no way of getting this on the air. There's no Twitter. There's no internet, okay? The Suns are playing in Atlanta. It's late, you know, early evening now. It's a 4 o'clock tip, and now it's like 6 o'clock. I have no way of getting this on the air.
Oh.
And so I'm trying to figure out how to do it. And finally, I look at the clock, and the clock gave me the tip. It was like, might have been 5:50 or 6:50, I can't remember. And so I ran into the control studio, and the board op is there. Board op is a guy who plays the commercials, makes sure the broadcast on the air. And I said, "I'm going to do the ID at the top of the hour. So take the card out. I'm going to do the ID." And so at the top of the hour, Al McCoy called for the ID. I said, "This is Tim Roy on, you know, KTAR in Phoenix. And after the game, Greg Schulte and I will tell you why Bill Frieder is the new head basketball coach at Arizona State."
Wow, what a tease. What a tease. That is awesome.
So we go back, and about 5 minutes later, the Associated Press office calls and says, "I was just listening to the Suns game. Did you just say Bill Frieder was going to be head coach?" "Yeah, yep. We got Bill Frieder coming in as head coach." And so that's how it went out on the ticker. It says KTR Radio says they have learned that, you know. And so I was very proud of that one. And then the second one was, I was on vacation in San Francisco. And we had hired, my general manager hired me, who I loved, had moved on to another station. They had brought back an old general manager who had been in the station before. And he decided he wanted to go in a different direction with a sports talk show. Except he didn't tell me. And so I'm on vacation. And I call back to my answering machine, and one of the messages there was by our program director saying, "Call me right now. It's really important." And my joke was, I thought somebody passed away, and it was me, you know. So I call back, and he was very gracious. He said, "Look, general manager made this announcement. He's hiring a new guy. He didn't go through. He just was so excited about it. He just went and did it." And so it was in the paper. I didn't know it was in the paper, and everybody in Phoenix knew I was out, but, you know, nobody, you know, could have gotten a hold of me because there were no cell phones, there was no internet, right? So,
bag phones would have been helpful at that point.
Yeah, exactly. So then, to his credit, the general manager, when I got back there, said, "My bad, I really screwed this up." And he goes, and he let me stay at the radio station to do my tapes, make my phone calls. He printed up my resume and stationery. And he basically told me, he says, "If you have a job you want and you go for it, you let me know. I'll call the general manager and tell him exactly why, what's going on here. And what I'm going to tell him is that I just wanted something different, and this guy's really good. You should hire him." So I sent and then went back to upstate New York, worked with a friend of mine for a weekend in Cornell. And over a beer one night after we got done in Ithaca, He convinced me. He says, "Hey, it's a job up in Sacramento. It involves the NBA. You need to go for this." And I said, "I don't know." So finally, hemmed and hawed. And then with two cassette machines, I made a tape in Ithaca, New York the next morning, FedExed it out. By the time I got back to Phoenix a day later, there was an answering machine message from Rick Etchison, the general manager of KFBK Radio, says, "When can you come up here for an interview? I want to talk to you right now." So I flew up the next day, and he says, "You're not leaving until you sign a contract." And that's how I got in the NBA and loved it in Sacramento for 6 years. But again, the Warrior job came open. They had heard me because I was in Sacramento. I wanted to push myself, and so I wanted to get to this top five market. I did. 25 years later, because I did that, I've done Major League Baseball. I've done major college football for Stanford, which I enjoyed thoroughly. I've gotten to do so many different things, and I've gotten to go to the NBA Finals 5 years in a row. Who would have ever imagined that? So, I mean, it's just been remarkable.
It has been incredible. And then that story of weaving it all together and how it all went from Utica to Birmingham to Phoenix to Sacramento and now the Bay Area, really beautiful stuff. Let's wrap this up with this concept. This is a craft. There's an art form to it, what you do and how you do these broadcasts. There's also the stuff that's not on the radio, perhaps, but like you do with the Warriors Vox podcast, conversations and telling the larger story about the team. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify to Warriors Vox, all one word, podcast. It's part of the Golden State Warriors radio network of podcasts and what we do with Warriors Sound. But this new frontier, where do you see broadcasting for teams going in the next 10, 15, maybe 20 years? How do things evolve? There's a Bay Area guy who now is with the Utah Jazz that kind of does, it's almost like a talk show when the game is on, David Locke, and he has his own podcast network, Locked On, and so on and so forth. I mean, he does some unique things. There's some people doing different kinds of things, but if you could kind of envision where sports broadcasting goes and what are things that just can't change because it's core to fans feeling emotions and also understanding. Where do you think broadcasting is heading for teams?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think it's a little scary time, I think, for radio, from just a radio standpoint, because there's not that many places that train kids how to do it anymore. And then B, a lot of teams are going away from it. You know, there's a couple of hockey teams now at simulcast. So I'm a little worried about that. The A's are on a all streaming platform and a radio network outside the Bay Area this year, so that's a little interesting. We'll see how that works. It's great, I think, for a kid who's an A's fan who's 25. If you're a baseball fan who's 55, maybe problematic. I don't know. We'll see. I'm curious to see how it all turns out. But so I'm a little worried about that. Team broadcasting is interesting right now because in the NBA, you know, radio's been off the floor for a long time now. TV's coming off the floor. It's a different feel up there. You have to create more energy because the energy when you're sitting courtside is right there for you. You just have to ride along with it. And when you're up top sometimes, you have to kind of create your own energy because that stealing a dunk is really impressive courtside. Not as impressive when you're, you know, halfway up the building because it just, you don't get the scope and the scale. But so that part's a little bit a little worrisome. But I think there's a lot of talented broadcasters out there, a lot of kids that I know who are really, really good. One of the things we're proud of with Warriors Radio is that we were the first NBA radio broadcast to use a lot of sound. And very proud of that fact, and very proud that other broadcasters recognize that. And, you know, a little bit harder in the back in the day doing it when I would dub sound from cassette to cassette or use a shortcut, which was a machine that had a dial on it, and you had to spin the dial to get to different sound bites, but a little easier now. But no, I think the craft is still there. You know, you still have to describe what you see. And I always tell young broadcasters, you know, they'll send me a tape or a link, as they would now, and I click on the link, and almost invariably the message is the same. Your basics are good. You have who has the ball, who's shooting, who where, you know, and now you got to flush it out. You know, where are they on the floor? Is it the right elbow, the right hash mark? Is he dribbling with the right hand or the left hand? Is he 6'3 or is he 6'8? Because I tell people, if you can describe a high school game with players I've never seen before and give me that visual picture of who they are, what they look like, why they're, you know, where they are, then you've got me. I'll listen to that broadcast all night long. And so, you know, the whole art on radio is creating the picture inside your head. And to me, it's always meant trying to get as many little details of the picture I see into somebody else's head. I want them to feel like they're sitting right next to me and that they see exactly what I see. And if I can do that, then I've done my job. And so, you know, the rest is kind of just fun and window dressing. But, you know, the basics are there. I think the craft is still there. But the for a radio broadcast, it's a little worrisome because we're so video-oriented now. Everybody wants to be on TV. Everybody wants to do a TV broadcast. And a TV broadcast, and no offense to anybody doing TV, but from a play-by-play guy's stance, it's a lot simpler. You know, you can just say Curry because you see Curry taking a shot. He's not, you know, behind the back, going between the legs, the dribble, spinning, whatever. He's just, you know, the picture tells you that. And so, the one thing about radio I've always loved is it's really fun and it's really an art form. And so I feel I try to bring that. I look at a season like it's a book. And I want each game is a chapter. And so what I try to think about is there might be something that happened in Chapter 3 that's still relevant or relatable in Chapter 74. And so that's, you know, that goes to the preparation and everything else. But, yeah, it's a lot of fun. And I'm a little curious to see where we're going with all the technology we have today. And I hope that there's room for a lot of, you know, great broadcasters in years to come. I know there's a lot of great young kids coming up now. I get their links and their resumes and their phone calls, and I know there's a lot of kids that are really passionate about it, and that's good to see.
Well, when it comes to the art and painting the pictures, you are one of the very best and a great colleague. Tim, thank you so much for joining the Warriors podcast.
It's always great to be with you, Lawrence, and I enjoyed it a lot, and you know, it's so much fun. You know, you think about your early days, and I've been back to Utica a couple times. The college has been nice. You know, they put me into their Sports Hall of Fame for whatever reason, but it's so fun to reflect on the journey, because that's really what it's all about. It's about the journey. It's not about, you know, how much money you make or where you end up. It's about, you know, your whole life going through all these things. And I've been blessed to be with, you know, with a lot of great people, a lot of supportive people, and certainly right now, you know, working with the Warriors, we have the, you know, support of our management and our ownership, and it's we have great jobs because of you know, the kind of, you know, situations they put us in.
Well put. With Tim Roy, I'm Lawrence Scott. Thank you for listening to the Warriors podcast.